Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Miss Amy. How are you doing today?
I'm much better.
I know. I was worried about you.
That's the worst I've ever had the flu.
Really?
I was in bed, knocked out. Yeah. When I don't show up for the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
I know.
Yeah, I was sick last week, but I'm much better. Actually, today I feel like I'm about 95%.
95?
Yeah, which is good because I leave on my big trip.
I know. So you got to be better for that.
Yeah. So next week we have Chad is filling in for me.
Good.
And some great guests. And then I'll come back and tell you all about Italy. Can't wait. But this show this morning, Lee, we've got a very diverse lineup, but gosh, a lot for our listeners to digest. And first up, you know, I talk about how I had the flu and went to get tested. And it's kind of interestingly, you know how they test you for the flu?
No, I do not.
It's like a little thing they stick in your nose. It'll swab.
This is for the H1N1 flu or
just
any flu?
Influenza in general. And then they take it, I guess, to the next level. But I'm not even going to talk anymore about that because we have the expert here.
Right.
With us this morning, we have Dr. William Alexander from Morehouse School of Medicine here to give us a little bit of an update on H1N1. And for unless you've been living under a rock, you know that it's definitely the most prevalent flu currently spreading in America. And they're just lots and lots of folks concerned about it. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Dr. Alexander.
Thank you.
So I kind of like the H1N1. Sounds better than swine flu.
Right. I like H1N1 better than swine
flu. Is it related to pigs? Like, why does it name that?
Well, I think that there's an interesting triad of humans, birds, and pigs and other animals that share flu viruses, and they kind of mix up and create new viruses, and that's one of the things that we're dealing with today.
Now, does H1N1 affect a certain population of people more than another?
Well, you know, this is a new virus. We're literally in the quote-unquote second wave of the virus, if you will. It's active in 26 states throughout the United States, and Georgia is one of them. Like flu viruses, folks who are at the highest risk for the complications of the flu are the very young, the very old, pregnant women, and children and adults who have chronic medical conditions like asthma, diabetes, heart disease, immune system compromise from medicines, cancer, or even HIV/AIDS.
In the past, when you think about flu, we usually think about kids and kids missing school. What is this doing to the business community? I mean, there are a lot of business owners that it's really going to affect them, having employees out. Are we recommending a vaccine? Give us an update on all that.
Well, unfortunately, there's a recent study done by the Harvard School of Public Health that many businesses are not prepared for what might happen during this upcoming flu season. A couple of years ago, related to emergency preparedness, businesses were encouraged to develop preparedness plans, disaster recovery plans, business continuity plans in preparation for the avian flu that we talked about a few years ago, H5N1. So I think it's imperative for businesses to have a plan. They need to review their HR policies related to compensation, leave, and they need to think about what would happen if I have a significant number of my employees out due to the flu. I mean, how can I keep my business running if I've got 10% of my employees out, 20%, 30%? So a plan is critical.
They need a backup plan.
Need a backup plan. And they need to be flexible. We're in uncharted waters, and we're recommending that if people are sick with a flu-like illness, typically fever greater than 100 degrees Fahrenheit, sore throat, cough, sometimes you'll have a headache, muscle aches, and with H1N1, you can have vomiting or diarrhea, that if you're sick, you need to stay home. Typically, the illness will last for approximately a week, 3 to 5 mm-hmm. days to a week. And the recommendation is that you should stay home until your fever goes away without taking any medicines to bring your temperature down, ibuprofen or acetaminophen, for example.
I'll tell you, a fever in an adult, my temperature was 102 when I went to the doctor, and my ears felt like they were on fire. I mean, I was waiting to look in the mirror and see flames coming off my ear. Because 102 in an adult. I mean, when's the last time you had a fever?
I run a high fever all the time.
Really?
I mean, when I run a fever, I run extremely high.
Because I really haven't had a fever in years, and I felt it definitely. So people are thinking about the flu vaccine. Do they need to get that in addition to the H1N1 vaccine when it comes out?
Right. This is the time to not only get, think about the H1N1 vaccine that'll be available in a couple of weeks, but seasonal flu that happens every year. And remember, with the seasonal flu, it causes a couple hundred thousand hospitalizations a year and 30,000 deaths. So we can't ignore seasonal flu. At this point in time, though, the H1N1 is by far the most common flu virus affecting the United States. So the strategy is to get a seasonal flu shot, and then when the H1 vaccine becomes available, particularly those at highest risk for flu complications that I mentioned earlier, as well as young folks, they should consider getting the H1N1 vaccine.
Now, it doesn't sound like it's quite as serious as we originally thought. It sounds like something that you stay in bed. I mean, you can be hospitalized, but is there something that can be given to speed it up? I've heard about Tamiflu and some of the other.
Right.
To speed what up? What does that mean, speed it up?
Well, I think to help you get better faster.
Right.
Right. Well, here I think the current recommendations are the following. In terms of using Tamiflu or Relenza, the two antiviral medicines, the best thing would be for those who are at the highest risk of flu complications, they should get the medication. For those who are otherwise healthy, treat yourself conservatively, drink plenty of liquids, rest, etc. So that's currently the recommendation, because if we use a lot of the medication, you run the risk of resistance, and we've already seen that with the H1N1 virus. And so the current recommendations for those who are at high risk for complications, they should get the medicine. If you are otherwise healthy, treat yourself conservatively. But if you don't get better, then seek medical care, and then you may be a candidate for it if you don't get better.
What I've heard that some government areas are making it mandatory. Like certain healthcare professionals to.
In terms of the vaccine,
right.
I think with seasonal flu, in many situations for healthcare workers, it is mandatory because healthcare workers can get the flu and then they can give it to patients. And there's nothing worse than giving a patient the flu because
right.
you're trying to get them out of the hospital,
right.
Not keep them in the hospital longer. And so you'll see for healthcare workers for seasonal flu. And for the H1N1, when it becomes available,
mm-hmm.
Healthcare workers are on the list for those to get the new H1N1.
But it's
vaccine.
Not mandatory for everybody, right?
I think in the business world, I don't think it. And there's a lot of interest about that in Georgia, but I think many of the businesses will make it available, but not necessarily mandatory. The key thing is to try to get as many people vaccinated. You know, if you can get 50, 60, 70% of folks vaccinated, then you can decrease the chance of a widespread outbreak.
So other than getting the vaccination when it comes out, what are some other things that our listeners can do to help? I know washing your hands. I mean, what's the standard protocol?
Well, good hand and cough hygiene. So wash your hands with soap and water. Sing to yourself, happy birthday to me, happy birthday to me, happy birthday to me. Wash your hands that long. Carry hand sanitizer. Practice good cough hygiene. So cough into a tissue, throw it away, wash your hands. If you don't have a tissue, cough into your elbow. So I think those are things that are very important. Cleaning surfaces, common areas with what you usually use to clean surfaces, because the virus gets in the air in droplets and drops all over the place and can survive for hours. So I think good hand hygiene, good cough hygiene, cleaning surfaces are the ways to decrease the spread.
Now, when you say hand hygiene, like should we be washing our hands like 5, 10, 15 times a day?
Well, I think you need to be more conscious about washing your hands. If you shake hands with individuals, touch objects, just get in the habit of trying to do that. This virus, you know, as humans, we have a tendency to touch our nose, our eye, and so if you get the virus on your hands, then you're off to the races in terms of getting a flu-like illness.
Okay.
So I think just raising the consciousness. There's another concept called social distancing where, again, businesses will have to think about this, where if you can try to separate workers by 6 feet roughly is another thing to think about, particularly if we get into an epidemic that is quite widespread and you're trying to figure out a way to, keep the business going.
Sure. Great advice.
Is there a website you would recommend for people to get more current information?
Yeah, I think the CDC has a great website, www.flu.gov. has a lot of information there for individuals, families. The CDC provides guidance for businesses to address H1N1, so I'd encourage businesses to consider that that information, review that information.
Terrific. Thanks for being with us today and for sharing the knowledge that you have, because definitely when you get sick, you need to stay home. I think a lot of people think that they get the guilt complex, like, oh, I got to go to work, got to go to work. And really, that's very selfish. You're getting other people sick. You need to stay home, stay in bed, rest, and stay healthy, right?
But the fever is the trigger point?
Right. I think you stay home until your fever goes away for at least a day without taking any medication. A couple other comments, if I might.
Sure.
There's some recent information that even though you feel better, you might still be able to spread the virus. And so when you come back to work, continue to practice good hand hygiene and cough hygiene. And I think the other thing for businesses to consider is the need for a doctor's slip to come back to work. There's several, both the government and other entities are recommending that businesses think about that and think about it, be more flexible, maybe not after 3 to 5 days. We don't want the healthcare system clogged with folks
getting notes from
getting
their doctor.
Right.
Sure.
But if somebody, you know, has the flu, flu-like illness, and, you know, they've been out for a week, be flexible.
Okay.
Right.
That's good
and
advice.
Especially not only with the individual, but their children. I mean, they're dealing
Absolutely.
With their children, and that magnifies it.
Absolutely. If the kids have to go home, school shut down, daycare sends kids home, we really have to think about not only the employee and dealing with the illness themselves, but taking care of family
sure.
and other loved ones.
Right.
Absolutely. Thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure.
We appreciate it. Boy, we're really shifting gears now. When you're healthy and feeling better, what do you love to do, Lee?
I know you live at the mall.
You're so funny. Actually, it's kind of a joke because, no offense, Shelley, but I'm not a big shopper. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show this morning. We have Shelley Widener, Director of Mall Marketing and Business Development, and we're very anxious to hear about all the new improvements to Down Center at Cobb. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you, Lee.
So what's going on at Town Center at Cobb?
Well, we've recently finished a large-scale renovation at the mall, bringing Town Center into the 21st century. As a lot of you may know, the mall was opened in 1986, and you know, we've had one renovation since then in 1998, but we were in dire need of getting some modernization into the mall. So we've done a lot of things on the interior and exterior of the property to give the mall a more refreshed look and, you know, really match the mall's physical appearance with the dynamic retail that we've been bringing into the property.
I haven't seen it yet. What's been the reaction? Are folks coming in and saying, wow? Or, I mean, what's been the reaction to it?
Yeah, definitely. Over the past year, and we just finished the renovation in June, and, you know, since then, the reaction from the customers has been outstanding. Also with our retailers, a lot of the retailers have seen what we have done with the property and have also invested in their own stores and renovated. So many of them have done that as well, including Macy's, who did a large-scale renovation, and JCPenney's, who is just finishing up a 30,000-square-foot expansion and renovation, which in this day and age is a testament, you know, to
sure.
the retail community and their belief in Simon and the property.
So a lot of large stores, it sounds like. Again, I'm not a big shopper, so I don't know. I never shop. I can't tell you the last time I went shopping.
Now, at the mall, are you finding in the economy more smaller businesses coming back to the mall, or is it the larger companies?
Both. Town Center is very fortunate. Our leasing is great. We hardly have any vacancies at the property. And, you know, we've welcomed a lot of new stores over the last couple of years, including Godiva Chocolatier, H&M, Swarovski Crystal, Sephora, which just opened, and we just opened up the first Deichmann Shoes. It's a big European shoe store, and we opened the first store in the United States at Town Center at Cobb. So wow. We're very proud and excited about that.
So if someone doesn't like to shop, there's lots of community involvement and things that get people into Town Center other yes. than just shopping, which I think is fabulous. Tell us a little bit about your community involvement.
Okay, yeah, we host probably close to 175 events a year. It's wow. a lot of work, but we get to work with a lot of community organizations, which is a great part of my job. You know, in the mall, we have what we call the Simon's Kidgets Club, which is for our kids, and it's a loyalty program for them, and we have events, different themed events every month for them, and we also work with a lot of community groups, including the Girl Scouts, the Boy Scouts, the Special Olympics, I mean, you name it, you know, pretty much. If they want to do an event, we try our best to accommodate them. We're also working with the Strand Theater in Marietta, doing a fundraiser fashion show, which is tomorrow. And Town Center at Cobb is the exclusive partner with them, and we are coordinating the show and providing the clothes from our stores on prominent women in the community. So it's going to be a really fun event there tomorrow night. And we also have our own charity with the Simon Youth Foundation, and we raise money for at-risk youth and students, and we donate money to the organization throughout the year. But our big event in the Atlanta area is coming up. All of the Simon properties, we have 7 in Atlanta, have joined together for a bowling event at 300 Atlanta, and we've raised so far over $60,000 for our charity.
Wow.
So are you competing against each other, all
well,
the malls? Or?
We all had certain goals we had to reach, right. But everybody has pulled their fair share to bring in the bucks, so I think it's going to be a fun event. It's our first annual, and we hope to make it even more successful next year.
How do community organizations reach out to you if they want to, you know, do some event at your mall?
They can call me at the mall. Myself and my assistant filter through all the requests, and if it's an event that we can do, we certainly move forward with that. They can email me through the website. If you go to simon.com and pull up Town Center at Cobb, our contact information is on the site, and you can email me through there. But
do a lot of the schools, you know, set up like kind of concerts and things like that at the mall periodically?
We do during holiday time. We have holiday entertainment, so a lot of our local schools come in and sing for the customers.
Mm-hmm. So is that easy to facilitate? Like mm-hmm. they just have to contact you?
Yep. They we have a program for it, and we have a certain place that we set them up, and they contact us, and we set them up on a date.
I'll be seeing you soon to do my holiday shopping. I have to get all of my holiday shopping done before like the beginning of November.
So well,
I
don't need to come.
I don't have to see the crowds. Yes, what a great lineup of stores.
Do you do any like mall walking or any of those kind of activities?
We do have a very active mall walker program, and you know, we have our regulars out there every morning, and they are serious about it. So.
What is that, before the mall opens?
Yes.
And yeah. So how do they just do
the laps? The doors open at 8 o'clock, and uh-huh. And you know, so usually they're doing their laps before the mall opens at 10, and it's a great way to stay dry and right. get some exercise.
And all year round.
Yes, definitely.
I think I'll be a mall walker someday. That's fun. I mean, you can window shop, and you can
Do you know the distance around the mall? Is that like
I put you on the spot now. They do, if you do call the mall, guest services knows that.
But they do many laps, right? They don't just go one time around?
No, a lot. I mean, depending on their health
time,
and
right.
their time, but a lot of them do a lot of laps and quick.
Right, so. At a good pace.
Yes.
So what's your forecast for the holiday season?
Well, you know, we're cautiously optimistic. I think we had a really good tax-free weekend, so we're hoping that will carry into holiday season. You know, right now we're planning all of the events and activities for the holiday season. It's going to be jam-packed. Santa actually arrives early at this mall. He arrives on November 6th. So
week after Halloween.
The Friday Santa. After. Yes.
Wow.
So he comes early.
Soon
to
he'll
center.
Be year round. You know that, right?
No.
He'll be
no.
there year round. But at some point. That's what's happening.
No.
We have a lot of kids that want to see Santa at Town Center at Cobb. It's very popular there. So,
and you have a lot of business travelers, too. I know if I'm at a convention, I usually multitask and I'll pop over to run errands and shop.
Yeah, the Kennesaw area has, you know, more and more hotels are popping up. And we've got a new Embassy Suites up the road. And, you know, several new hotels have renovated, and it's become an area where there is a lot of business travel there.
Yeah, the university has expanded dramatically.
Huge,
yes.
Huge.
Yeah, and that's huge for the mall as well. We're very excited about it.
And lots of great restaurants.
Yes, definitely. And that's something that we're working on at Town Center, too, is the restaurant leasing. So if anybody has a restaurant they want to open, please give us a call.
Terrific. Well, thanks for being with us. Any final thoughts or anything else you want to share with our listeners, any upcoming events?
You know, besides, we do have our big Boo Bash, which is our trick-or-treating. We do mall-wide trick-or-treating, so it's a safe place for kids to come on October 31st from 5:30 to 7:30, so that's our next big event. But you can always visit simon.com and pull up Town Center's page and see all of our events listed out.
Terrific. Thanks for being with us this morning, and check out the website, go shopping. Also visit Total Wine while you're up there. Have you been to Total Wine? I mean, there's one closer to us now, but there's so many great places up in that area. My headquartered office is in Kennesaw, so
you're there all the time.
I am. Lots of great places, again, to eat and shop. Thanks for being with us today, and thanks for the treat. I think I'll put my coffee in my coffee.
Oh, there you go.
Thank you guys for having
Thank
me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Shelley. We hope you have a great day. Next up, I mean, Lee, when I moved to Atlanta, one of the first things, and it's been, 15 years? One of the first things people always said is, you got to go to the Fox Theater. You got to check out the Fox Theater. And since then, it's now a family tradition to go see the Nutcracker at the Fox Theater. Have you ever been?
No. I've been to the Fox, not to the Nutcracker.
You've
got
to go to the Nutcracker. And Max would love it, too. So would Abby.
Okay.
You've got to see.
It's in order.
I've seen the Nutcracker many times, but never have I seen
I've had a niece that performed in it.
You got to go then. Never have I seen it quite like when you see it at the Fox. Our next guest knows all about the Fox Theater. Alan Vella is here with us this morning from the Fox Theater. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, Alan, I would love to know. I have so many questions about the Fox. There's so much rich history. First of all, what do you do at the Fox?
I'm the general manager.
Okay. And the big question people always want to know is, who owns the Fox Theater?
You know, Alan does.
I wish I did.
Do you live there?
No, I don't. We do have a resident, but I'm not the resident.
Someone really lives there?
Yes, that's true. I'll get into that in a second. But the, you know, because there's been so many new people moving into Atlanta, I think quite a few transplants don't really know much about our history. But the Fox Theater is owned by Atlanta Landmarks Incorporated, which is a nonprofit corporation that purchased the Fox back in the 70s when it was at risk of being demolished. And it's always been their mission to, you know, save and preserve and restore the Fox for, you know, for future Atlantans.
It is so beautiful. I mean, when you look around at some of the intricate artwork, and it's just a gorgeous place. I'd love the behind-the-scenes tour, by the way.
Anytime.
Can
nice.
You arrange that?
You're just working
just,
it
just
now.
Give us a call. Yeah, she is.
You know, I'm not shy. I'm going to go ahead and ask.
Maybe when you guys come see the Nutcracker, that would
there
be fine.
You go.
We work something out.
I would love that. So the history is very rich with the Fox Theater. How do you think it compares with other theaters throughout the country? You had experience working at other theaters. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I've worked in the industry for about 22 years, and I actually ran the Fox Theater in Detroit, which is a similar atmospheric theater that also, back in the 20s, was actually owned. That particular theater was owned and operated by William Fox, which was the primary tenant of the Fox Theater Atlanta. The Fox Theater in Atlanta was built by Yerub Temple. It was built as a mosque, essentially, for the Shriners, a social men's mosque, not really a religious mosque. But at that time, William Fox also was building several other large atmospheric theaters of approximately 5,000 seats in size and scope in Brooklyn, San Francisco, Detroit, in St. Louis. And as this theater was being built, the Shriners quickly became over budget, and they got into a little financial trouble. So they appealed to Mr. Fox to be the primary tenant, and that's kind of where the marriage all began. And it actually began during construction. So if you look very closely at our theater, it's fully restored to the size, scope, and features it had back in 1929. And our carpet displays two crests, the F crest for William Fox and then the Shrine Temple crest for Yerub Temple. So there's a marriage of sorts at that time and some minor changes in the construction. But the Fox, since 1970s, has been owned and operated by Atlanta Landmarks Incorporated, and we've been a very successful theater. And today, we're the number three theater in the world out of the top 100 theaters throughout the globe. And that's by our gross sales and our volume. So all the industry trades rank us either number two or three throughout the world.
Now, in the 20s and 30s, is that the way theaters, they all look like that?
Not really. It was William Fox's dream to have these really beautiful, ornate, Moorish theaters. And back in the 20s, if you remember...
don't remember.
Well, you remember your history. you do look rather old. King Tut's tomb was discovered in 1922. So America, or North America, was really kind of enamored with that whole Egyptian theme and motif. And so a lot of theaters were influenced that way. So the Fox Theater in St. Louis that still exists, Detroit, and our theater all have similar kind of atmospheric
themes. So
there's
three left?
There's three left.
Three Fox theaters left?
Mm-hmm.
Are they all called Fox in those markets?
Yes, they are.
And it seems like they always sell out the events that come to the Fox. I would love to know, I mean, like, how many nights of the week or of the year is the Fox Theater actually booked?
About 300 nights out of the year we are booked. Some of those nights could be moving in or moving out of a major show,
right,
like Color Purple or Mary Poppins. But we host 300 performances a year, approximately 750,000 people a year, which basically and essentially outgrosses many arenas and sometimes even Radio City Music Hall. So we're one of the top theaters in the world, and I think Atlanta has a lot to be proud of with the Fox Theater.
And they get such a diverse group of people, too. I've seen David Copperfield, which I think is my favorite show at the Fox. That was so unbelievable. But then you see people like Sting and then the Nutcracker and other musicals and performances. Can you talk a little bit about the programming at the Fox?
Sure. We believe the Fox Theater is everybody's theater, and we wish to have every demographic enjoy the theater. It's our promise to preserve and make the theater available to everyone. So we have everything from children's entertainment and children's shows for school kids to international entertainment with the Delta International series to hip hop to ballet.
What about wrestling? Any wrestling?
I've considered it, but I'm not a very good wrestler.
Well, Ultimate Fighting, maybe?
That would be...
Well, we did have an offer for Ultimate Fighting, but unfortunately we turned it down. But you know, and then concerts. Like tonight, we have Rob Thomas tonight. And then next week, we have a great show called Rain, which is a tribute to the Beatles, which is part of the Theater of the Stars run. We also have the Rockettes coming up this year, which we get every 4 years, the Radio City Christmas Spectacular. And then the annual Nutcracker appearance will be coming up. So... we do a little bit of everything, and we're happy to do it.
And really, that is a little bit of everything when you think about how diverse that is. But don't add wrestling, okay?
Okay.
Yeah,
for everybody.
I don't know about that. It's just something about these sweet little girls dancing around for the Nutcracker and then, like, the next night having a bunch of sweaty men. No. That didn't work for me. And it's just so pretty. The lighting is something that always catches my eye at the Fox. There's got to be a lot to maintain all those light bulbs and everything in the Fox Theater. Can you tell us a little bit about what that maintenance process is like?
Oh, sure. A couple things. First, that because we're a nonprofit and our mission is to preserve the theater, we put about $500,000 to $600,000 a year annually back into just our daily maintenance of the theater, but we invest about $1.5 million or more back into the renovation of the theater,
right,
every single year. We're the only theater in the country that has its own restoration and preservation department. We have our own archive. We're all about the theater and preserving it. And we spend a lot of time and effort. We have some really great and talented people in that department that are constantly renovating areas of the theater, touching up areas that get kind of scratch and dents from all of our volume that go through the theater.
I'm sure.
We hope to... place new carpeting in the theater this year, which will be an absolute duplicate of what was done originally. And we have 250,000 square feet worth of theater and facility to manage and maintain. So we're constantly reinvesting in the theater. And because of our talented staff in the Restoration and Preservation Department, we can do it and still maintain our landmark status.
Now, is the theater in good shape now? I know that you had mentioned earlier that they were in a precarious position a while ago, but now is it stabilized now that you're so successful in terms of financially? You're
really, it has been since the 70s, since probably the mid 80s, the Fox has operated at a profit, if you will, with excess revenues, and it's been stabilized quite some time. And over that time, we've probably put close to $30 million back into the theater in terms of renovation. So, but given the size and scope of the theater and the age of approximately 80 years, there's always work to be done.
Right, your to-do list never gets shorter.
Yeah, our staff is always working. And when you have so many people through the theater, there's always work, and there's always things to maintain.
How do you change those little light bulbs up in the stars? Are they tiny? Are they individual?
They are individual light bulbs. As you know, obviously we have a constellation in our theater and have a sky. My daughter, who's now six, when we first moved here 3 years ago, I brought her into the theater and I said something referring to about being inside the theater. And she said, "No, Daddy, we're outside." I said, "No, honey, we're inside." And she really got angry with me and said, "No, we are outside. Look at the sky and the stars." And that constellation, which is original to the theater, of course, has individual bulbs that flicker like the stars. And yes, it's pretty precarious to get to those bulbs, but our maintenance staff does a fine job doing that. And actually, you know, you were talking about lighting. We are also one of our programs right now is we have a 3-year project where we're reinvesting in our lighting, and we're putting a lot of LED lighting into the facility because it's such a green product and it lasts so long and creates very little heat and has very little maintenance. And we're relighting and brightening up certain areas of the theater to show off and feature the architecture that maybe previously you didn't see as easily.
You also host corporate events for our listeners that are looking for a great place to have an incredible holiday party, maybe not this year, but next year. Tell us a little bit about that.
I think this year's a great year for holiday parties.
Really? So if you're not completely booked yet.
We might be able to squeeze you in. We have two beautiful ballrooms in the theater that are on the second floor. They operate independently or in conjunction with the theater, depending on what the guest wishes to do. And they're often booked about 300 nights a year as well, independently of the theater. And it's a wonderful place to have a wedding, a Christmas party, any kind of corporate function, and we do everything from bar mitzvahs to Christmas parties to weddings to proms and all kinds of great corporate events.
Yeah, it's wonderful. We've had some Aflac events there, and they take good care of you. It's just a gorgeous place. I mean, it's one of those places you go and you don't have to decorate.
No decoration required. Yes, we have a lovely veranda that you can get to and see the beautiful skyline as well.
Now, tell me about the person who lives there. Is this a ghost or is this a real person?
We do refer to him as the Phantom of the Fox. Joe Patton was one of the original members of Atlanta Landmarks, and we credit him a great deal for helping to save the theater, as well as a lot of other great Atlantans that are still with us and working with us. And Joe was our original technical director. Joe knows the building better than anybody. He's about 82 years old now. He knows the building inside and out. He keeps me on my toes. He frequently comes by and tells me if there's a light bulb out or something I need to fix or repair that the maintenance staff missed. He's terrific. And many years ago, Joe actually started living in the theater because we did not have the benefit of having 24-hour security. And Joe and his trusty German Shepherd would live in the theater, and he eventually built himself an apartment within the theater. And he has always helped secure the theater, if you will. And actually, when we had the fire many years ago, I believe it was 96, Joe was the one to first discover it and help, you know, I guess, put a stop to it, if you will. And so Joe's been a really important part of the theater. He originally came to us by restoring the organ. He was a volunteer, and he was restoring the Mighty Mo, which is this fabulous organ and a one-of-a-kind piece, the second-largest organ in North America. And then Joe just kind of always became part of us and is kind of woven into the fabric of the Fox, and he still lives there today.
Now, volunteers are an important part of your organization as well?
Yes, they are. We have a terrific volunteer staff that helps us with ushering duties every performance, and they really help us by donating their time and services and keeping our costs
down. Is that a coveted position to be a volunteer, or is that hard to be a volunteer there?
I'm not sure if you're qualified, but I think a lot of your listeners are probably qualified. No, but you can contact the Fox Theater at foxtheater.org, and that's theatre.org.
The classier way.
Theatre. And you can find us through our general information, and we'd love for more volunteer ushers. And actually, you know, we're always looking for additional ushers, and the benefit of that job is you get to see a great show to boot.
Right.
Oh, I bet. But there's a background check, Lee.
I'm out. Never mind.
Go past that. So last but not least, what is the number one thing you think people probably don't know about the Fox Theater in Atlanta?
I think, you know, luckily you touched upon it before. I think they don't realize that we're a nonprofit theater and that we do a lot of things in the community. We beyond reinvesting in the theater and making sure it's there for future generations and preserving it properly, we have a great outreach program, actually two terrific programs. One serves children, predominantly at-risk youth. We have Fox Camp Broadway series every summer where we bring kids in and they meet New York professionals that are voice coaches, drama coaches, and folks that have worked on Broadway, and they give them a little taste of what it's like to be in a Broadway show and how to continue their career if they wish to have one in Broadway. Also, we have Ailey Camp, which is was first developed by the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater in New York. And there's several camps throughout the United States, but we host the camp here in Atlanta, and it's for at-risk youth, and we use dance as a vehicle to help children to stay in school, to build confidence, to teach them to feel better about themselves, and a myriad of life skills that they need because, you know, some of the kids are just challenged by everything today, and it's a much tougher life these days for kids. So we're very proud of that. And then finally, the Fox Theater Institute. This is a new program. It's about 2 years old now, where the Fox Theater reaches out to other historic properties around Georgia, and we help other historic theaters kind of get on their feet, if you will. It might be through a booking consortium that we develop for the state of Georgia. It could be through the toolbox that we offer. It might be how do you properly clean your theater? How do you properly book your theater? How do you properly maintain it? It could also be, and mostly it's been renovation and preservation consulting in terms of undertaking projects of renovating areas and such. So we feel there's a real value in these historic properties throughout the state, and we want to give back some more and teach them what we've learned. And that's really been a great project, and it's still in its infancy, and we need lots of help and lots of corporate help. But, it's a terrific project, and it's good for Georgia.
Absolutely. Great for Georgia. And any of our listeners that have not been to the Fox Theater, you've got to go. No matter what the show is, it's always special. I've never had a bad experience there.
Well, thank you. And we believe the service is really important, and we're a large theater, so there's always tickets available. Come see us on Ticketmaster.com.
Terrific. Thanks so much for being with us today, Alan. And I'm going to contact you. You know, I've got a birthday coming up. Christmas Eve.
Get that ballroom.
Ooh, and then I got a ballroom for you.
Yeah. Well,
maybe a tour of Joe's apartment or something like
that.
There
you go.
I'm thinking Joe might need a chef.
There you go.
You know,
your culinary background.
Someone who
Joe would be happy to host you, I'm sure.
What does he like? Brownies? What can I bring him? I got to bring him something.
You know, he's a bachelor. Probably anything. I think he'd be happy.
Just you showing up is good enough.
I already like Joe, and I haven't even met him.
He's a very nice man.
Thanks for being with us today, Alan. And we hope folks will check out the Fox Theater in Atlanta.
Yeah, please come visit us. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being with us, boy Lee. We're shifting gears again, but you know
what
we
do.
We do, but when you talk about any of the businesses listening and anybody, whether it's a small business, the entrepreneur, someone just starting a company, it seems like the number one thing is getting your message out. And it used to be, you know, paper and marketing, and now that's all changed. Now people are looking to see how they can get a first page Google rank. And we hear a lot of folks that come into the Atlanta Business Radio Show talk about that. But with us this morning, we have George Ishii, and he's here to tell us all about how to get that first page Google rank. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Great. Thanks for having me, Amy and Lee.
So, George, tell us about your company and how we can go about getting some first page Google rank.
Well, it's kind of interesting. In this economy, everybody's looking for ways to generate leads. It's a challenge for small and large businesses, and some of the very interesting statistics that people don't probably realize, but now 82% of people online look for local products. They actually, 97% people will actually, who have online access, will actually research that product or service online, and 66% of those folks will actually buy on a local level. So they're using the internet as a standard today, and everybody kind of knows they have to get on the first page of Google, but they don't know how to do it or they can't afford it, and they're using things called pay-per-click, which they can't afford, et cetera. So what we've done, we have a new service called AdZoo, and all those ads out there are like a big zoo. You know, you don't know which animal is going to work or not. So what we've done with this is create a new program where we create a marketing campaign, whether you have a website or not, and we put you on the first page of Google when somebody searches you, and we do that based on a radius from your office because that's where your clients are. They're not out of town. They're local.
Yeah, for the most part, people do business locally. So now you're with the Ultimate HD Productions.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about that and the affiliation with the search engine Rankin.
Well, the Ultimate actually is a combination of products to help businesses. It's high-definition videos for small businesses because now if you want to keep people attracted and keep their attention on the web, video works, you know, like 12 times better. It keeps your attention, and that's how you promote your business in a little 3 to 5 minute introduction about your business. And to expand on that knowledge to help these businesses, to help them drive leads and prosper in this market, that's what the ultimate goal is.
Got it. So what type of business or company would look for these services?
Well, it's interesting because it works mostly for service businesses, professional businesses, or in retail. Services might be plumbing, HVAC, roofing companies, landscaping, people that provide a service that they go out to into your local community. Professionals like dentists, doctors, attorneys, they also attract their local folks there. But what we find is most businesses are not good at marketing. They don't understand it. They don't like it. And the only reason they do it is they need leads so they can then go do what they do best, which is their profession.
Sure.
So with this new product, we take that out of their hands and we do it all for them. We want them to be in their business, and we run the marketing campaigns and get them on the first page of Google.
Terrific. But you know what, George? I'm telling you, it sounds expensive.
actually, unfortunately not. It starts as low as $120 as a monthly fee, and most people that have been, you know, trying the pay-per-click or hiring SEO experts and all these things, this is extremely affordable, so it's designed for the small business.
Our listeners love to hear stories. Tell us a success story of how this might have worked, because we are familiar with the pay-per-click and more with those types of models. Tell us a success story about how this has worked for somebody.
Okay, a couple of recent ones. We had a coach that was struggling a little bit to get in front of enough people. So we got his AdZoo ad up, and within the first month, he had 8,000 impressions on Google on the first page in his local area. And from him, it was only a 10-mile radius. So what that meant is 8,000 people that were searching within a 10-mile radius of his office were searching for Google, and he made that first page. So I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and then how'd that impact his business?
Well, he's still working it because he's brand new with it, but he's had, a chunk of those folks, probably about 37 of those folks that actually clicked through to do that. Another great example is another local company that's in a niche market, and he's had his ad up 2.5 weeks once we got the campaign up, and he's already got 4 hot qualified leads, and he's ecstatic because he's in a niche market and he's been running ads and all kinds of different things just in this helter-skelter mode and got 0. And when we talk to businesses, that's the normal thing. But he got 4 hot leads, so he's just ecstatic. So,
wow.
Pretty exciting.
It sounds like there's some kind of guarantee.
Well,
tell me about that.
Yeah, the guarantee actually says if we don't get you on the first page of Google, then either at your choice you don't pay for it that month or you can cancel and you don't pay for that last month. So the whole question is, if you can get more money coming in than going out, how long would you run that campaign? And somebody told me yesterday, they looked at me silly and said, forever. So that's kind of what this product does. It's new, it's innovative, and it's really designed to get results.
Now, what if a company has multiple locations throughout the country? How do you address that?
We actually have several companies that are doing that already, that they're, instead of doing a national Google-type campaign, which is very, very expensive, they just go in and get a mile radius from their local offices and set up a separate campaign to drive the local business to them.
Okay, that makes sense. And having it all under one expert like yourself. You've had a lot of experience in this arena. So, you know, coming forth with the Adzu and working together with The Ultimate, I mean, tell us about your marketing experience. Maybe that will fill in the blanks for some of our listeners, because you really have a lot of experience.
Oh, thank you. My background has been sales and marketing for 27 years, and it's all about getting results. And as I mentioned, getting more money coming in than going out. And today, that's so important. So building marketing campaigns and understanding it first started with just print ads and getting people to pay attention so they raise their hand and say, I'm qualified and interested. And then it shifted to the internet, and now this product actually does that, because now the customers are researching, coming to the website, finding it, and there when they call you, they're raising their hand and saying, I'm qualified and interested, and the statistics are backing that up, that they are the active buyers that everybody's looking for.
Wow.
And then do people reach you through The Ultimate?
Yes, they would. Actually, we have a dedicated person, Bianca, at theultimate.com. That's BIANCA.com. Or they can call her directly if they want to get a quote right away at 404-835-1111, 404-835-1111.
And the work that The Ultimate does is amazing. If anybody needs video production, can't tell you. They do such an amazing job. They did a bio video for Lee and I. You can view that on theultimate.com. And then I'm also fortunate enough to work with Chip on the culinary segment. So it's the network really is very robust. And then to add this additional tool for folks is remarkable.
I think what's the most amazing thing with The Ultimate is you can actually get a video high-end produced for $500.
Yeah.
So that's it's something that everybody can afford, and for those that are looking to grow their business and come out of this economy on the top side of it, it's a must.
And for those of you that are shy with the camera, I have a face for radio, and they even make me look pretty good. So they have a lot of talent at The Ultimate. So for our listeners that are interested in learning more, we'll definitely post a link for them. Any final thoughts from you, George? I know with the economy the way it is, sometimes people pull back on marketing when really they should be moving forward. But any final thoughts from you?
Yes, we actually look at folks, because people are actually still in this economy spending marketing dollars, but they're not spending them as wisely. So what we tell them is look at what you're spending today and just re-vector it over into a campaign that we can run for you because it works. And it's got guarantees to it. And we do all the work for them. They don't have to worry about all this internet stuff. They just like people calling them.
Wonderful. Great advice. Lee, we'll have to make sure we get The Ultimate up there and then also the Adzu link so folks can check out TheUltimate.com and Adzu. Thanks for sharing your knowledge with us today, George. 27 years, man. That's a lot of years. You don't look that old. You started when you were 10, I'm sure. All right. Well, you know, Lee, there's one underlying theme, it seems like, when you're in on 285 and it's rush hour and people are beeping their horns and everybody's angry and getting upset. There's a lot of anger in our world, and our next guest is here to address it, and I'm so thrilled that someone actually wrote a book about this. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. We have Charlie Cummins, the author of Uprooting Anger, Eliminating the Emotion That Kills. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Morning, Amy. Morning, Lee.
So, Charlie, you've been a guest of ours in the past in a different capacity, and we love to keep in touch with our guests. And the fact that you've written this book, it's probably been a long time coming, but I'd love to know, what was your inspiration?
What, you know, really bothered you so much that you had to write a book about anger?
What bothered Well, you know, it's a combination, really, of, as you know, when we've met before, of my background in clinical psychology, and both sort of personal experiences having growing up faced with anger. And, of course, I was a competitive athlete for a long time, and when I found out that when football and contact sports ended, I was left with a little bit of my own anger to deal with. But really, in the clinical world, found that anger was really pervasive in just about everybody, or impacted everybody's life that I was dealing with. And as I now am in business consulting, I find that it's no different in the business world as well. And that anger is really a pervasive and can really unhinge our lives, our relationships, and even our businesses.
But now, some anger is positive, though, right? You know, like I'd get my kids all riled up before their sporting events, trying to get them, I guess it's a little angry, right, about beating the competition. And so,
or just motivated.
Yeah, what's the difference?
You don't want to be angry.
Am I confusing the two? Tell me, is there anything positive at all about anger?
Well, I think that when we talk about anger, we really do talk about it as the most destructive emotion. Because of all the negative things that it does do, and we can talk about that in a bit. But it really only serves two positive purposes, I find. And one is if you can use the anger as a positive motivation to overcome. So when you're talking about competitive sports, yeah, getting the adrenaline pumped up and using it, that anger as a motivation to overcome an obstacle, then it can be a pretty good use. And then I think the only second positive with anger is if you can, we can muster great strength in our ability to defend ourselves if necessary with anger. And that, of course, comes from all the adrenaline and sort of the fight or flight instincts that we have.
So anger is the fight portion of that?
Yes,
or
it is.
Or both? Is it flight also?
It's both fight or and flight. It kind of that's the behavior, which mm-hmm. way you're ever going to go with it. But that is the thing. That's why anger is actually not on par with other emotions, because it does trigger the fight or flight instinct,
right,
which triggers a whole range of release of adrenaline and other chemicals in our body, unlike any other emotion. So it really affects us physically. And as a matter of fact, people who struggle with anger are 10 times more likely to have heart disease than people who don't, as a result of a lot of those hormones and chemicals that are being dumped into our body. So,
how do you define struggle with anger? Because a lot of people who are angry, they don't think they're struggling with it. They have the philosophy of, you know, there's people that give ulcers and get ulcers, so, you know, I'm okay with being the one that gives it. You know, they're angry all the time, so they're okay with it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. If they're okay with it, then they're probably not going to have much success in changing it. But I think, you know, and really what we talk about in the key to anger is, and the key to eliminating it. If you notice the title of the book, I used the word, I went out on a limb and talked about eliminating anger. Because I found that in the clinical world, there's a lot of techniques that people try to use to manage their anger. But they tend to not uproot the underlying problem.
Right. Well, you're not talking about managing it. You're talking about eliminating it.
I'm talking about eliminating
it. Things.
Yeah. And the key really to eliminating it and to answer your last question is if the anger is impacting other people, that's really the key. And if you really want to try and get on the path towards eliminating anger, the real key is understanding, it's a Buddhist concept, actually, that we're all familiar with, is that in life, I hate to say this, but in life we all suffer. Nobody escapes suffering in life. In life, death is sort of part of it, so we all have to experience that. And really, if you understand that concept of suffering, it leaves us with a choice as to whether we want to contribute to the suffering of others through our anger, or do you want to become an antidote? And that is sort of one shift in thinking that's a real catalyst towards moving towards the elimination of it.
But don't you find that people that are really angry people, they don't have that kind of self-awareness to separate themselves from others, or they're...
Yeah, and that would be the problem, actually, with one of the issues with anger itself, is that it distorts our thinking. Mm-hmm. Anger itself is a very selfish emotion. Think about it. When we get angry, we blame other things. We feel that we have been something
victimized,
unjust and
right.
victimized. And that itself is the nature of anger, in that it is a real selfish emotion. And really, the link of that is, though, too, is we have to understand that anger is what I call parasitic emotion, mm-hmm. meaning that if I have anger and I give it to you, which I would never do, Lee.
Thank you for that, Charlie.
If I give it to you, then basically, as we understand parasites, they latch on to things and suck energy and give nothing back.
Right.
So if I give my anger to you, or if I'm on 285 and Amy cuts me off and I give her a little bit of my anger, basically then she now has it. So anger is parasitic, and it kind of passes itself along. So if I give it to you, you're going to have it, and you're going to pass it along too.
But don't you feel better?
No, well, there is sort of a cathartic release, yes, and actually, really, because anger has that real physiological component, it is important to have that release. And what I've found in my own life is, if I'm not getting a healthy release, as you know, I'm a martial artist and I hike and ride motorcycles and stuff like and skydive. Those things really help sort of bleed some of that energy, and it is a fundamental tool. That is one tool to help sort of manage it as well. You got to understand. You got to release some of that energy in a healthier way.
Right.
I shoot stuff.
You shoot stuff. We know you don't chop.
No, I don't chop. But
she's got a gun.
I do. I have a gun. We'll travel. But it's not. I don't like to shoot anything living. But the sporting clays, there's something. Watching that thing shatter, it is the best release of anger. And I'm not an angry person. But you're right. Finding the outlet to manage that.
How many times you go shooting a week? An angry person.
My husband might be listening. Usually once a week, at best. I'd love to shoot once a week. On Friday afternoons, I'm a much better mother and wife if I can go shooting on Friday afternoon than enjoy my weekend.
And I would consider that a healthy release of your anger.
Great.
Well, ask your husband if that's true.
Well, it's the budget for shooting. It's not a cheap sport.
It's not, and you and I'll have to go shooting someday.
And then you do have to have the attire for that, so I guess that
you have to dress up at the mall.
You don't find those things at
the mall.
That's
right, Amy. Shooting is all about fashion.
Exactly. No, she's a ninja.
Okay, now I'm getting the giggles. But really, the anger component of it, I'm not an angry person. It doesn't eliminate any anger or anxiety I have, but are you trying to say it would help me manage it, that type of physical release? Or
it's one tool in the toolbox.
Okay, so yep. There is a difference, though, between managing and eliminating, right?
Yeah, there is. And I think that in really the image, and if you look at the book there, I talked about uprooting. If you really want to think about anger, think of anger as being like a diseased tree. And what I found in sort of in the clinical work that often we have techniques, shooting, for example, might be one technique to help manage anger. But very often techniques are like cutting off just a diseased limb of that tree. The tree still exists.
Okay.
So really what I talk about in the book is an approach that really combines those techniques, yes, but really tries to help you focus on how can we uproot the tree completely.
Mm-hmm.
And we may not get there. I may not get there in my lifetime with regard to eliminating my anger, but it's certainly a worthwhile pursuit.
Absolutely a worthwhile pursuit, because anger does really affect businesses, too, and the relationships with coworkers. Can you maybe talk a little bit about that just for our business community that's listening?
Yeah, very much, because I basically, as you know, moved from the couch to the boardroom probably about 8 years ago, and I do my company is Core Performance Consulting, and so we do business consulting with companies, and inevitably, anger issues, they come up when we're dealing with human beings and relationships. Conflict, I coach, is actually a healthy thing for team developing, but it's got to be healthy conflict. An unhealthy conflict, it really distances people at work. It affects communication. If you're talking about what I was talking about earlier, things like adrenaline and all that kick in with anger, they affect our thinking. It affects our decision making.
Sure.
So what I find with a lot of clients is when there is a lot of, and when you're talking about anger, we're talking about negative emotions, carte blanche, sort of like annoyance and belligerence and all that, and frustration. They affect our decision-making. They affect the organizational communication. They affect pretty much everything down the line. So it does come up in a lot of my consulting work as well.
If people want to buy the book, how can they do that, Charlie?
Go to Amazon.com. It's okay. Called Uprooting Anger, Eliminating the Emotion That Kills. You can also probably get more information or see other things that I'm writing at my website, which is www.coreperformanceconsulting.com.
Okay.
I also have a blog, coreperformanceblog.com, and periodically talk about anger, obviously, and take snippets from the book in there as well.
I like your blog, by the way. You're funny. Some people's blogs, they just get boring, but your humor, I do appreciate in your
Thanks.
Blog.
Thanks. I try and take some serious topics and put a healthy, funny spin on it, yeah. So thank you.
Definitely. Well, thanks for being with us, and thanks for the book. I'm really anxious to read this, and I see that there are some exercises in it, and you really will make me think, I'm sure, whereas I don't consider myself to be an angry person, but maybe there's a little there.
All right.
And I can eliminate it or manage it. We hope our listeners will reach out and purchase the book on Amazon.com, and we'll have that link up as well. And Charlie, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks. Nice to see both of you again. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, when you write the next book, make sure that we hear about it so we can have you on again.
I certainly will. I've got one in the fire already.
Excellent. Can't wait to hear about that. Next up, Lee, and certainly not last, he is last, but not least. Yes, that's what I meant to say. From the Entrepreneur Source, we have Terry Trace, and I'm anxious to talk to him for a couple of reasons. We have a lot of entrepreneurs that come in and out of the studio, and anyone that's been listening up to this point, I mean, there's a lot of different business opportunities, but there's a mindset that leads someone to be an entrepreneur. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Terry.
Thanks, Amy.
So the Entrepreneur Source, we'd love to know more about it.
What we do is we consult with people who are interested in becoming an entrepreneur.
Okay.
Someone who's had that itch all their life and for whatever reason now has decided to move forward and look at becoming an entrepreneur mostly through franchising.
Through franchising. Because you look at it, folks go to college and you don't really major in entrepreneurialism. I mean, it's something that is sort of a personality trait, wouldn't you say, or a characteristic of a business person, a mindset?
It is. There's certain behaviors that we all exhibit that lend itself to being an entrepreneur, certainly.
Tell us some of those. I mean, are there things that you possess? You
generally need to enjoy working with people.
Okay.
And you generally need to be a quick decision maker, somebody who's going to look at a situation and quickly make a decision based on the facts at hand.
So I always think about entrepreneurs as those that don't necessarily think in the box, but they think outside the box or outside the circle, and they're just a little bit more creative with their business sense. But when you talk about franchises, that's usually a proven business model. Walk us through how you help entrepreneurs through the franchising model.
In today's environment, especially with the new career economy and the heavy layoffs that we're all seeing, a lot of corporate executives are looking to entrepreneurship or franchises as a way to continue their career. And franchises give them the framework that they're used to from being in the corporate world. They're used to having a framework, used to having an organization behind them. And franchises offer that to an individual who's looking to become a business owner, but maybe doesn't have a product or service in mind.
And who would be an ideal client for you?
I've been dealing lately with a lot of the laid-off mid-level to senior-level executives.
And do people have to have a pretty good chunk of money to meet with you to invest in something?
Well, and that's one of the myths and misunderstandings. Certainly, some cash is required, but there's a sweet spot in franchises somewhere between the $75,000 to $150,000 mark, and of that, you require about 25% down in cash.
Has this economy impacted that? Because I know a lot of franchise owners use their home as their main collateral for franchises.
It has certainly, because the home values are decreased now. But the financial institutions, like they always do, they find a way, and there are new programs out there that are available.
We've had finance guys on recently too that say that they're more apt to loan money to someone when it's a franchise model rather than just a startup, you know, brand new type of concept. That the franchise model being proven, they're easier to get financing. So how long have you been with the Entrepreneur Source?
I've been there about 3 years, and the Entrepreneur Source is a franchise in itself.
Okay.
So I'm a franchise who helps people explore franchise ownership.
That's like, what do you call that, a double entendre?
It's like those Russian dolls.
the nesting dolls, right. Yes, one inside of the other. Okay, so maybe walk us through a success story or someone that you've worked with and how you may have helped them.
Absolutely. A couple. One I'm thinking about is Dave. Dave was a very successful executive, but he was on the road every week, and his two girls were growing up, so he was gone from Monday to Thursday every week, and he wasn't seeing his two girls grow. He was a referral, actually, from another placement, and we walked through. I spend 2 hours up front, 2 one-hour sessions, consulting sessions, and in between I do a DISC assessment. It's a behavior style assessment. And then after I come up with a possibilities profile for that individual, which models would likely fit them, because there's so many out there. I help them narrow down to the top three or four, and then I help them explore. So as we were learning about the different models, he discovered and narrowed down to one, moved into it. He's been in business about 8 months now and is very, very successful, and is home every night.
That's good. I mean, it is. There are so many precious moments in the life of a family, and if you're not around for it, you blink and it's gone. So to be able to help someone create a career and a path that involves time with their family is probably very rewarding for you as well. Maybe give us a couple of different types of franchises. I mean, there, gosh, we hear of so many. People
right,
usually
nowadays,
think of food, but...
Right, there's...
That always comes up. Food always comes up because people think that's all there is. Food actually accounts for about 21% of the franchises.
Oh, that's
there.
It? That's I would have thought there was more.
Me too.
A lot of home-based and small office-based now, business consulting actually is a franchise.
Right. Is that the largest now, the home-based?
I would say in this environment it's become the largest recently because of the retail costs.
So if someone's listening right now and they're thinking, gosh, I'm frustrated. I'm sitting at my desk listening to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'd love to get out of here. I'd love to start something new. How can they reach you?
They can reach me at my website. It's the e-source, two E's together, theesource.com/ttrace.
Terrific. And you can help by offering expertise and maybe narrowing down what might be the best fit for them as it comes to franchising.
Right. Or if it's even a fit at all. Right?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Right.
We cover that first. And right. There's no fees for my services to my clients.
So. Definitely, that's so no someone, harm in checking this out.
Absolutely not. And so someone comes to you and gets the DISC profile done and is just off the charts, not at all entrepreneurial-minded, you can just say, sorry, go back to your desk.
I had one client that I narrowed down to one model, and he explored that one model, and the franchisor came back and said, we don't think he's a good fit.
Really?
So I coached him then to look at other options.
And when you get those folks that come in and they just have a lot of anger, you can give them a copy of
Charlie's
book.
That's right.
Work together here.
And if you think that maybe they just need to go see some good theater and relax, you can send them to the Fox Theater.
Fox Theater.
And if they need retail therapy, you
send
know where
to the
send
mall.
Them.
Town center.
And hope to God they don't have H1N1 because then they're at home and in bed for 10 days. Terry, thank you so much for being with us
sure,
today.
Sure, pleasure.
We hope that our listeners will reach out and check out your services and learn more about what you do. Thanks for being with us. Lee, I can't
this
believe.
This was a workout, huh?
It was a workout. Yeah, it was a mental, verbal workout. Now I need to go get a physical one in. And I plan to do a lot of walking in Italy, and I plan to come back to tell you all about the food.
Yes, that's what I'm excited about.
Yeah, the Thanks. Food and wine I'm most excited about. I'll see you in 2 weeks, but next week tune in because we've got a group of great guests, and Chad will be here to co-host for me with Lee. Until next time, I'm Amy Otto with the Atlanta Business Radio Show.